Tonight's guest speaker is James. James was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes around 10 years ago in February 2012, aged 23. After a career in the music industry, James became a healthcare assistant and then trained to become a nurse. James is a diabetes educator for Eden and also is a diabetes specialist nurse. James is an avid user of social media and enjoys engaging with people with diabetes, healthcare professionals, and anyone within the diabetes community and industry. So, James, welcome to the Diabetes Chat, buddy.
Hello. Hello, everyone.
Hey, it's nice to see you here.
I know, it's nice to be here. And I would just want to say first, thank you for having me. And I want to say, you know, huge congrats to this platform, this space, as we call it as well, because there really isn't anything quite like it. Obviously, there's the great GB Doc, but this is quite something as well. You know, since you've started, you've had amazing speakers on, and from the sounds of when we spoke as well, Tom, it sounds like you've got amazing speakers to come as well. So I'm thrilled to be here. Hopefully I'll give you guys lots to think about, and yeah, I hope you enjoy tonight, because yeah, we've done a little bit of prep for it. So yeah, looking forward to it.
Really appreciate that, James. It's been amazing connecting with you last couple of weeks and months, and chatting to you last couple of weeks on Zoom and prepping for tonight. So appreciate your time, and you put a lot into tonight's chat, and it's been amazing connecting with all the guest speakers, and I'm really privileged to have you this evening.
Where are you based, James?
I'm based at Leicester. That's where I work, but I live just outside Leicester. I live at the king of the places, that is Pork Pie Central. That's Melton Mowbray.
Awesome.
Before we kick off, James, why don't we have a bit of a fun game? You up for it, buddy?
Is it Monopoly? I'm up for Monopoly.
I am not good at Monopoly. No, I'm not good. My wife would advise you not to play Monopoly with me.
So is the brown ones. You've got to start with the brown ones and build from there.
Oh,
I'm going to buy you a digital copy of Monopoly now. Just so I can play with you.
I do have Monopoly on my Switch. Yes, I do. But no, it's not a Monopoly, James. I hope if we ever meet in person for a pint or two, we can get the old Monopoly board out and we can have a go, eh? So, James, let's play a game. It's our Diabetes 90-second questions. And I will ask you some questions. It's sort of quick-fire sort of response answers. We'll take your time. And then I'll make a short video, put it all together, and get it on our YouTube channel. So let's go.
Yeah, go for it.
What is your name?
James.
What is your occupation?
Diabetes educator and diabetes specialist nurse.
When were you diagnosed with diabetes and what age?
The 12th of February 2012, and I was 23.
What is your favourite hypo treatment?
I don't like any because I don't like hypos, but of the treatments, I'm going to say fruit pastels are my go-to.
Yes, and I saw your tweet replying to Lefred the other day with the arrow. I didn't actually reply back to you. Did you actually do that yourself?
Yeah, so that was for Hypo Awareness Week.
So I
thought, oh, I'm just going a bit weird here, so I'll just make a random picture of a downward arrow with hypo treatments. Now, it was for Hypo Awareness Week.
Brilliant. I was like, I did wonder why you did that. Ace, love it. Have you had any type 1 complications? Yes or no?
Not as such. I did get diagnosed with Hashimoto's thyroiditis, which is basically low thyroid levels, but it's the autoimmune cause. And there is some link there with type 1 diabetes. So not in terms of eyes or kidneys or anything, or feet. But yeah, that's probably the only thing.
Yeah. Do you use insulin pens or pump?
Pump now.
Yeah. If we would have done this chat a week or so, guys, it would have been pens, wouldn't it?
It would have. It's a different story now.
Oh, yes. A new chapter. Do you finger prick or CGM?
I do both.
What pump do you use?
Yeah, I use the Omnipod Dash.
What CGM do you use?
I use Freestyle Libre 2.
What's worse, feeling hypo or feeling hyper?
When I was on pens, hypos, now I'm on pump, hyper.
Are you hyper aware?
I am.
What three symptoms, if you have three, do you have of hypos?
Shaky, irritable, and I'm going to say sweaty.
When you finger prick, do you change the lancets every day?
More often than not.
One thing you like about your diabetes?
Ooh, I guess the networking and the opportunities I've had from it.
Brilliant answer, that one. Love that. One thing you don't like about your diabetes?
That it's for life.
Yeah. Do you love or hate the smell of insulin?
I'm going to say love.
And if you're on a desert island, what three things would you take? And you may wish to take diabetes things, but if you want to just take random stuff, go for it.
Ooh, okay. Can I say diabetes things as one? Because that's like a lot of stuff.
Of course.
Okay, diabetes things, which includes hypo treatments. Probably my running shoes, because I love running. And I've got to say my family, because my partner would kill me if she knew I wouldn't take her. So, yeah, family, shoes, and diabetes things.
Brilliant stuff, mate. That was our 90-second questions. Love that. I'll pop it in a video and we'll tweet it out next week or so. But appreciate a bit of fun there, mate. Let's crack on, James, shall we?
Oh yeah, shall we?
Let's go. So let's take it right to the beginning, right? Let's talk about your career. Because obviously you were diagnosed with diabetes later on, as I do know. But tell us a little bit about your career background and how you got into nursing, but sort of pre-nursing as well, what you got up to before that and what made you go into nursing.
Okay, so I guess it came from things really started in terms of I did singing. I used to sing for a living, whereas I used to do kind of the London circuit. I had offers to do abroad and some minor recording things. I sang in a few theatres, which some people might not know. And it was when I got offered to go to Madeira for 6 months and sing in their main sort of capital casino that I became unwell and they had to replace me kind of on the spot before the flight. And it was at that moment that, you go for many auditions and stuff. So you go from one end of the country or to the other, and I sort of realized that I don't really think I'm all into this sort of traveling, unknown, unpredictable sort of career, really. It's not really for me. So then I sort of stopped doing singing. So it was a good number of years I did it for, and I'd sort of had a pause, and I thought, what's my sort of character? What do I enjoy doing? And I spoke to my family, and they said, well, you like looking after us when we're unwell. Like you make us teas and coffees and you put a blanket on us, etc. So have you ever thought about, why not try caring and things? And I thought, okay, I'll explore that. So I managed to get a job as a care assistant at a care home in my local town where I grew up. And it was the most amazing experience one of the most amazing experiences of my life, I would say, because you meet people you would never meet in any walk of life. Cool. I remember having one of my, you're not meant to have favorites, but obviously in a place where you're working all the time, there was one called Grace who was 105, and on her 104th birthday, she was walking in the town and sadly had a fall. And she was just amazing because she spoke about the war and how she played the organ and things like that. And you just don't hear those type of stories
anywhere else.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I sort of went from a carer to a senior carer, and I obviously developed in that role. And it was when I was seeing the residents sort of deteriorate in terms of acute deterioration. So if they became unwell, some sort of infection, etc., I'd be quick to flag it up and speak to the GPs and give a really good history, or as we call it, sort of an SBAR handover. You should Google SBAR if you're not sure. And they said, have you ever thought about going into nursing? And I thought, oh, not really. I thought, because at the time I was thinking, well, maybe I could do like some sort of care home management or something like that. And
yeah,
so I then thought about it and I applied to go to university, because for the nursing degree, at the time it was a degree / diploma, but for student nursing now, it's just a pure degree. So I did. I trained as a student nurse at the University of Bedfordshire, and that was an amazing 3 years, because it's different to, I guess, other types of degrees, except for other healthcare professional registration / degrees, because not only you're having to do your modules, etc., for your undergraduate program, but you're also having to do placements of different specialities to upskill your knowledge in various parts of healthcare. And I had a range of placements, and so at the end of it, you obtain a not only a degree but also a registration into the practice you're working in. So I obtained a degree honours plus registration for the nursing, which is the Nursing and Midwifery Council, and then it led me on to going to acute spinal at the Queen's Medical Centre in Nottingham, which was such an amazing experience, because there's things you would never see, as you would in any sort of given situation in the hospital setting. You know, you have different specialities, so you meet many different walks of life, and I've seen sort of tragic instances of people not being able to walk again. But it was a very strange experience at first, which I didn't tell you, Tom, when we spoke, actually, because my best friend, who used to ride motorbikes, he sadly had a motorbike accident, and he was admitted to QMC, and the ward he went on to was the ward I was going to work for, which was a very unusual experience. And I was there when he was told that he was unable to walk again. So
wow.
And that was the first time I went there to sort of have just to see the ward before I started my first shifts. So I would get sort of these mini flashbacks beyond every time I went into the side rooms. So that was a very odd thing. Also, another reason that led me into, I guess, nursing was my singing teacher. When I first sort of knew I could sing, my parents took me to a singing teacher, and developed from there. And she was going to enter me in the Welsh National Championships, but my voice sadly broke. I mean, honestly, all the great things that happened to males, physiology. And when I was working at the care home, there was a resident that was sadly admitted with a stroke, and it was the singing teacher. And I said, you might not remember me, but I used to teach me how to sing. And I said, you helped me develop my gift, and I want to give all I can back to you. And that was another incentive for me to kind of go beyond what I was doing and going into nursing. So after the Queen's Med, I then moved to a subacute hospital. It's a bit like a community hospital, where I was a deputy ward manager at the time. And even though it's classed as a community hospital, it did so much more of things there, even things such as blood transfusions. And I learned around leadership and things. And I moved there because of family and family commitments. But I had always had a desire to be involved in diabetes. And then there became this job opportunity in EDEN, which stands for Effective Diabetes Education Now. And my passion for diabetes really started when I was training as a nurse in my second year, when I was on an A&E placement. I'm guessing, do we talk about this a bit later on, Tom?
No, if you want to talk about it now. I was going to say, you know, during your placements, how much coverage of diabetes was covered? Like, because it was quite broad, wasn't it? Was there specific units around diabetes, or was it very generalized?
So it depends on where you work. So each area had their own specialities, but, you know, around sort of, I think it's one in four now, one in four or one in six beds are, you know, in hospitals are sort of covered by someone living with diabetes. You know, it's a very prevalent condition, and you know, we know the risks that people with diabetes have, so they're at a higher risk of being admitted to hospital. So for most of the placements that I had, you know, I was around or looking after someone who had some form of diabetes. Yep. But the training itself, I would, I guess, because I work for a diabetes education team, I'm going to be a little bit critical on my undergraduate education. And I would say that the education I received around diabetes was actually a little bit poor. It really was only in that second year when they sort of told you a little bit about diabetes, but most of the education you sort of and learning you gathered around diabetes in general was during those placements themselves.
Placements, yeah.
Exactly. So you'd sort of see people given injections and you'd learn how to administer one and with supervision, obviously.
Did you have any background to diabetes prior to becoming a nurse? Anyone you knew who had diabetes, or did you know much about it? Or was it when you actually were starting training and at placements, you actually understood it and then realised how it works and the everyday logistics of coping with diabetes? Was it then when you started understanding more?
Yeah, I guess truly that understanding came through then upon my diagnosis and my gradual progress through the program. I supported people with diabetes in the care home, but I was very naive. I heard the word insulin, I saw NovoRapid, but hadn't got a clue what it meant, because ours was a residential. We required the district nurses at the time to administer the insulin, which now, because we do a massive, a major education program called CARES and Sanofi CARES, which we've got Amar Patana on the listening panel here, who's works with us, who's we're all about trying to enhance knowledge and confidence around management of diabetes in the care home setting. And if you think about someone receiving an injection, insulin injection to a resident, but you don't understand what that type of insulin is, then that could be really quite a safe matter, really, because they're having a mealtime insulin, but they're not going to eat, then there's a big risk there. So I guess it was really only until I was diagnosed with diabetes that the learning journey really kind of started.
Yeah,
and I guess
course.
My diagnosis was not a smooth one, which kind of led me into wanting to be involved in diabetes some way, because it was in 2012, the year of the London Olympics. So everyone's minds was preoccupied and other things, I'm sure. And I noticed that sort of a few weeks prior to my date of diagnosis that I started feeling, you know, those first classic symptoms of feeling thirsty more often and having a wee more often. But I thought, oh, okay, I'm probably just a bit stressed from placement. I'm probably just a bit tired. I'm probably just a bit unwell. But I'm sure it'll pass, you know, that when you're young, I suppose it could be at any age, you think you're indestructible. So you just think, oh, it'll pass, whatever it is. And so I did, and I tried to carry on with placement, and I noticed that things wasn't getting any better at all, and I was getting more tired. And it was only when my mum rang me in between her watching Coronation Street and EastEnders, then she'd stop the phone call. She said, have you thought about maybe diabetes? And I said, not really. That's the first flag that made me aware of it.
Yeah.
And then when the weeing at night and the increase first came into play, so at first it was, I just noticed it during the day, but when it then quickly happened during the night time, I thought, okay, something's, it's not quite right. And then when I was on an A&E placement at the time, so you have these big vital sign monitors, and I noticed that my eyesight was going all of a sudden, you know, making it more blurred, and I couldn't even see the vital signs, so I was no good at all. And I was having these recurrent thrush as well. So at that point I thought, well, I feel tired, I'm drinking all the time, I'm thirsty, I can't see, I feel absolutely useless and tired, I'm going to go and see my GP. So excuse me, it was on the Wednesday. I just remember a Wednesday, I had an appointment with a locum GP. So this was at my uni
place. So it was away from home, because I lived in Grantham at the home at the time, but my uni was in Bedfordshire. And it was a locum GP, and I explained my symptoms. And the GP first said, "Don't worry, James, you've not got diabetes, but we'll do a fasting glucose test in a few days' time to be sure." They didn't do a fingerprint check, and they said to me, "You're probably just stressed because of the A&E placement, but to be sure, we'll do that fasting glucose test. And for the eyes, you might want to go to Specsavers," because I wore glasses and I had contact lenses. They said, "Just to make sure your prescription's okay. And for the thrush, I want you to go to the sexual health clinic, just in case it's nothing sinister." So I went to the sexual health clinic, I went to Specsavers, and they said, "Yep, your prescription's really changed quite drastically. We'll get a new prescription for you." And I left, obviously before that, I left the appointment, and I felt reassured in one way, but not in another, because I still felt really awful. So I tried to battle through for the next few days, and I was on the placement on the Sunday itself. And I guess about an hour in, I just felt I couldn't go on any further on the shift itself. And I thought, I'll get one of the doctors or the nurses to check my sugar levels. And I explained my situation. They said, "Oh, okay, well, we'll just do a fingerprint check." And the nurse obviously wiped my finger, pricked it, and it came back as 30.6. But there was no ketones.
Wow.
That's impressive. So
sorry, go on.
Sorry, I was going to say, that's. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
My Twitter's broken. It still says I'm muted. I was going to say, that's impressive you had no ketones at 30. I was actually going to ask you what you were diagnosed with. Mine was HI, as in it just wasn't on their scale.
Yeah, so mine was 30.6. So I think HI has to be 30.3 or more, I think it was. So I was close. And I would say that within, if not during that day or the day after, I would have thought I would have started to producing ketones of some level. So the nurse looked a little bit shocked and showed the doctor, and the doctor said, "Quick, get another machine." He thought it was broken.
Wash your hands, quick.
Yeah, so then that read very similar as well. And from that instant, I was triaging patients, and they said, "You've got to be a patient now." So I went on a hospital bed, and about 45 minutes later, I said, "Is it diabetes?" And he said, "Yep, type 1. And that was that moment I developed diabetes. And it was that moment that I realized I wanted to do something. I get, well, probably not at that time, not at that moment, but shortly after and forevermore, I thought, I don't want anyone else to kind of go through that experience again, because all it would have really taken was for that doctor to have done a fingerprint check to then kind of gone, okay, something's not right here. We need you to go into hospital straight away. And I guess it's all about, I guess I was slightly naive and thinking I was indestructible. And I thought, okay, I can go carry on with this. And it's this awareness for both the public and also the healthcare professionals around those key symptoms that really is, you know, to raise that awareness. But despite the horrible situation it was, there was a light at the end of the tunnel. Obviously getting insulin was a massive thing. There was a doctor who sat by my bedside, and she just came up to me and she said, I heard sadly you've been diagnosed with type 1, and I just want to let you know that I've got type 1 myself, and I'm here to sit with you for, you know, if you want me to for a while and answer any questions you may have. And her main thing she said to me was, as long as you listen to everything from the doctors, from the diabetes nurses, and you do it everything safely, you will be okay, and you'll be able to do everything you want to in life. And it was that moment that I thought, that kind of spurred me on, I guess. And that's why when I'm supporting patients in the hospital setting, when they have their diagnosis, I always flash back to that moment. I think I want to give this patient right now the same experience that I had back then, because nothing can change the past. You can't change what's happened, but you can certainly help make their experience a bit more positive.
Of course. And I definitely remember when I was diagnosed, there was a, when I moved to the diabetes ward, There was a nurse there who was diabetic, and it was amazing having someone who was going through the same thing I was. And of course, there was other patients on the ward who had diabetes, but I just felt like so deflated and so like alone, but I was so motivated by like hearing the positive like role model from the nurse, and it just, like you say, it really spurred me on. So James, can you maybe tell us a little bit about your role as a nurse, a diabetes specialist nurse, and your role at Eden? Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, of course. So when my first kind of position within diabetes was actually with Eden. So Eden, as I said before, stands for Effective Diabetes Education Now, and it's the most amazing organization to work for. And we're based within the Leicester Diabetes Centre. And for those that you don't know of the Leicester Diabetes Centre, you could Google it, but it's one of the largest and most prestigious kind of and recognised diabetes centres in the world, and one of the largest in Europe as well. And it's headed up by Professor Kamlesh Kunti and Professor Melanie Davis, who are lead experts in type 2 diabetes. And we've recently had the pleasure of acquiring also Professor Prateek Chowdhury as well, who's quite a national lead in type 1 diabetes management, also is internationally known as well. And he's really stepped up the management around type 1 diabetes. So Eden is kind of like one of the organizations within the Leicester Diabetes Centre. So it has research, it has prevention organizations, it has Desmond, which you may have heard of. It's got different kind of portfolios to it, and Eden is one. And Eden's been going for around, I think, 10 years now, just over 10 years. And originally it was to kind of upskill knowledge and confidence for primary healthcare professionals in Leicester City around different areas of diabetes. So foot care, blood pressure, lipids, blood glucose, talked about injectable therapies, a range of things. And they found that improving knowledge and confidence actually helped contribute to improved standards of care. So then the outskirts of Leicester wanted to become involved in these different education sessions. And then what led from there is also a positive outcomes led beyond in those areas as well. And then other areas in the country came heard about Eden, which led to kind of further scope of education nationwide. So Eden does a lot of focus within our own patch, but we also do a lot of national works as well in many different areas around diabetes. So we have a different programs and modules and e-learnings as well. So our main kind of programs that are going at the moment is one called Complement Plus, which was originally for pharmacists but now is available for GPs and practice nurses. And it really goes things from back to basics to injectable therapies to oral therapies to cardiovascular management. And it's really a great package that upskills kind of everyone around diabetes who's working in the primary care sector, though we have got some secondary care professionals also taking on Complement Plus. I help lead on a program called CARES, which is, I mentioned before, is about enhancing knowledge and confidence for care home staff. We've also done a lot of work this year, in particular around upskilling in type 1 diabetes education. So we're to release a structured education virtual platform for people with type 1 diabetes. And my line manager called Laura said I can mention the name called Guide. So look out for it. It will be advertised, and it's going to be available for kind of all people in the UK with type 1 diabetes. And I think we're hoping to place it kind of anywhere in the pathway and have different modules. And obviously with the NICE guidance now coming out regarding available use for Flash and CGM for type 1 and Flash or cost equivalent of CGM for people with type 2 of use of insulin with certain criteria. What we've done is we've linked up with Dexcom and Abbott and PCDS and DTN UK to come up with a package of education materials called glucose sensing in primary care. So that's aimed at primary healthcare professionals. And we also have lots of other kind of projects in the making. So we've got Vicky on the listening panel at the moment, and she helps lead on a post-COVID clinic, which has had the most amazing outcomes. So obviously people that are living with diabetes that
then sadly developed COVID. We've seen many start on insulin, obviously, during that time of COVID. And then what they've been able to do is not just for those on insulin, but anyone really on any sort of therapy living with diabetes, they managed to utilize and support those patients beyond discharge, because you've got to think about long COVID symptoms as well. So that's the education side. There's so much more. You should check it out. So edendiabetes.com. And then from the diabetes clinical side, I do my diabetes specialist nurse role at the University Hospitals of Leicester. So same trust that Eden's within. And so I go to the three different hospitals, but I also do a clinic a month at my own town as well, where I mainly people with type 1 diabetes who are on flash. So I start people on flash or some form of CGM. I review them on CGM as well. So that's a bit about both, really.
It sounds incredible, mate, honestly. And I'm really excited to see all the continued amazing things that you guys at Eden are doing, and with the new project guide. Is there any timeline on when this sort of online platform will be available for people to check out?
I haven't got a date.
Was it still in the early?
No. It'll be released very soon.
Oh, wow. Brilliant. And it's a sort of online platform that people can go check out modules and help them.
Yeah, so it's headed up by Prateek Chowdhury, but myself, Vicky, a great senior dietitian who's part of Eden, Mike Skalatos, we've all developed the modules, and Prateek sort of has overseen them. So there's one around carb counting, technology, insulin, can't remember some of the others, the annual review as well. Knowing what happens on a yearly basis. So there's six key modules, and the way that we've done it is make them as interactive as possible, because there's many different modules out there are so mundane. Yeah. Just don't give kind of, it doesn't adhere to people with different learning styles. So we've really tried to make it as adaptable as possible. And the ultimate kind of aim is to, particularly for people that have been referred onto structured education, such as Daphne and Bertie, there can be sometimes a bit of a waiting game. So for those, it could be utilized at that time to really give them that skill and knowledge to get themselves going already.
It sounds incredible, James, because I think that's what is sometimes the missing piece, isn't it? That I was diagnosed 16 years ago, and it wasn't till 10 years later, I was offered Daphne course, and it's a big chunk to sort of get on with your diabetes, essentially. I remember for years they said, take this set dose for your background and this for your meals. But it wasn't until I actually went on Daphne and actually was with a group of peers and learned so much. So I think having this platform to build up that knowledge and stuff, that will be really beneficial to people, I'm sure. One final question. Go on,
actually,
Chris.
Tom, if I could jump in. Obviously, all of this stuff is very UK-centric, but since we've got definitely a worldwide audience listening here, I assume all of these things, since they're online, are available to anybody that wants to go and look at them. It's not just restricted to people who are on the NHS, right?
I'm not too sure. I can find out about that, actually, tomorrow. I know originally it was targeted at those within the UK, because obviously there's millibols per mole, but there's a way of working out the equivalent between milligrams per deciliter. By the way, it's 1 millimole per mole for every 18 milligrams per deciliter. I found that the other day, actually.
I only found out during this chat, actually, not now, but one of the previous ones.
Oh, really? It's a good way to find out, because obviously there's times you might go away and your meter might break, so it's a useful one. But to your question, Chris, I don't know, but I can find out.
Okay. Yeah, that would be it would be good information. I mean, obviously, lots of local organizations produce content and education tools and things like that. But even though they're targeted at one particular audience, they have obviously great utility for anyone who's living with diabetes. So if they are accessible and people outside the UK that want to look at them and maybe get a little bit of different perspective on things, that can always be useful as well. So it would be good to know if that's available to anyone.
Yeah, definitely. I think that access to education, I think, you know, from my perspective, I think it should be as widely given as possible. If you think about the patent for insulin was sold for $1 because they didn't want to keep it to themselves, they wanted to give it to the world, then my very much thought is that we should give it everything we can for people living with diabetes as well. But I know there are contractual things and other things that when we develop something, so I'll have to find out and I'll let you guys know.
Awesome, thank you. Sorry, I just wanted to clarify that since we're having this discussion here about the various resources you're developing.
But it's free for UK people, isn't it, James?
It will be, yes.
Yes, and I guess it would be for all people, really. So someone who's obviously got diabetes, but also maybe a family member or a friend or a partner, isn't it? It'd be quite educational for them to look at it or be part of that program with that type one person, isn't it? So that they can learn together, isn't it?
Absolutely. I haven't heard of any different in regards to strictly only to the person involved themselves, because, you know, the person that's key support people, family members, partners, etc., they're just as part of the journey as the individual themselves. And, you know, I as far as I'm aware, that part of that education, you know, they can look at the materials themselves because they're online as well.
Absolutely. One final question from me. Kind of guess looking at it is, I bet you love your job. Like, you've got two sort of roles as a diabetes educator at Eden, but also as a specialist nurse. So not only that, you're educating people in events and conferences or workshop or clinics, like, you're also working with them patients as well at your surgeries. What do you enjoy the most about being a nurse? And what would you say you'd find most challenging?
I guess for me, what I enjoy the most is, it sounds cheesy, just trying to make a general difference, no matter how big or small. I love kind of that I have a lived experience and I can really empathize with the patients and connect with them in a certain way that
in helps a unique them. Way, isn't it? Like, there are so many amazing consultants and nurses out there, but you as a diabetes specialist nurse, but living with diabetes, that's just like, wow, isn't it?
It definitely helps. I've not come across it where it hinders, but I like to do it at the right point. I don't like to immediately go in and say, look, I've got diabetes, I've been there, I've done that, because I haven't been there, I haven't done it all. There's many other people living with diabetes using pens and pumps that have done it for many more years than me. But I'll find the right point, and it might not be the right point, but there are times where I will say, you really aren't alone. In fact, you're sitting with someone right now who also lives with the condition as well. And it can be at times in the really hardest of times, someone that may have had surgery cancelled, or it just varies, really. And I guess that the next point was, what do I find most frustrating, hardest, is time. I guess I want to give as much time as possible for my patients, and I can't ever give as much time as possible. So that's the most frustrating thing. I guess that's because I truly do love my job, and I wake up each morning, and I don't want this thing to end. I really do enjoy what I do from both ends, both clinically and in education. And I think for anyone listening, if you can have a role that you really like, you found your passion in, then I think, you know, that's your happy place. And, you know, strive for things that you want to do for a living. And if you've not found it yet, then keep looking.
Keep looking, yeah, indeed. Brilliant stuff, mate. We're going to head over to Chris now, and he's going to talk a little bit about your journey with diabetes. I know we've covered a few little bits, but I'll head over to Chris.
Well, since we've covered some of the high points, maybe we can dig in a little bit deeper here. You talked about your symptoms and the sort of journey to diagnosis, and how so much of that probably could have been prevented if the first doctor had just done a finger stick. But one thing that jumped out at me there was that when you were finally admitted and you made the transition from being the triage nurse at A&E to all of a sudden being a patient, that it seemed pretty quick that they came back and said, well, it's type one. Do you know the criteria that they used there? Did they actually get a C-peptide level done that quickly?
That's
that would
a
be
great...
almost unheard of in the US.
Yeah, so that is a really good question. So no, I don't know. I guess at that point, they really couldn't have identified it as type one. And I don't really know if at that early stages I did have antibody testing. It was only during my pump, literally this year, that I, the consultant, I had a new consultant going into the pump team that he said, I can't actually identify an antibody testing record on your system, but you were in a previous trust when you were diagnosed. So I'm not sure. So I don't know if I did have C-peptide or GAD antibodies done. But I did then have the test done before starting the pump. And that was such a weird feeling because I thought, well, God, what if I haven't got type 1 diabetes? What happens if it's, you know, LADA or, something else? And I was thinking, gosh. But my C-peptide came back as very low. I think it was like 33 or something. So to below 200 generally is a kind of indicates as type one for anyone wanting to know. And my other antibodies were shown as positive as well. But yeah, so no, I don't. My true answer is I don't know. So I guess he was going on the presumption of being somewhat young, having my symptoms onset early. And I guess in relation to the NICE guidance, it kind of linked in a little bit going with those guidance. That has now kind of changed in relation with the, particularly with the ADA guidance, where they say, you know, try and do an antibody testing to confirm the diagnosis as well. Whereas at the time with NICE, I think they were saying that, you know, only kind of do these if unsure about the diagnosis as well. So I'm presuming he was going on the fact that I had these sudden osmotic symptoms being fairly youngish. But yeah, he said to me type one and I started insulin straight away. So I kind of thought, okay, it's type one. Yeah.
Interesting. I sort of similar. I actually didn't get a C-peptide or anything done. It was the diagnosis was all just based on the symptoms and the presentation. And I think it was, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago that at one point I looked at my endocrinologist and said, I don't think I've ever actually had this test done. Would you mind, you know, ordering a C-peptide level the next time I have blood drawn for laboratory tests? And they were willing to do that and it came back zero. So obviously that initial diagnosis was correct. But
I like how you were proactive and you were asking for it as well. That's really good.
Well, I think a lot of people are hesitant to suggest things to their clinicians. And I mean, diabetes is such a self-managed disease that I really think that more people need to be encouraged to dig in if they see things or have questions or whatever, just to try to get that clarity, because it also helps with patient engagement, which then turns into better management.
Oh, I agree. I couldn't agree more. And I think the more that we're raising the awareness around diabetes in general, the kind of the more equipped people are to kind of gaining knowing what direction to take and what question to ask, and also traditional methods of how healthcare is provided during, like, particular consultation skills, where very much everything was based on a medical model, but things have transitioned since. So medical model was very much
you listen to me, I'm the doctor, I know everything, what I say kind of goes. But now we're very much about a shared approach in how we should manage patient care. You know, it's not just thinking about what the doctor thinks is best, but it's also, you know, the person with the condition lives with the condition, and they're the one that has to go out through the door from there. So, you know, you've got to go by what's right for them as well.
Absolutely. The perfect medication isn't going to work if the patient doesn't want to take it.
Exactly. Totally agree.
Do you remember your first hypo? Do you remember what the feeling was, and in any details about that?
Yeah, I can. I do. I don't know if anyone else kind of remembers their kind of first diabetes events, but I remember my first hypo, and I guess I was so sweaty. Obviously, I heard you might have low sugars when your sugar level goes below 4. What would that be? So that'd be 18, 36. So that'd be 72? Is that less than 72?
Yeah, we use 70 as the sort of line in the sand. But yeah, 72.
It's 9:30 here, and my maths is still going. I'm doing all right. So, you know, you get told that number, and you think you might get some of these symptoms. But yeah, I had really bad, I mean, I just felt sweaty and shaky all of a sudden. And it was quite scary, I guess, because this kind of goes for those that don't live with the condition, without experiencing it, you know what the symptoms are, you know what to expect, but without experiencing it, there is really no comparison. It's like you doing a game console or something, and driving a car, but there's nothing the same as actually driving the car on the actual road itself. There's no comparison. So I definitely remember my first hypo, and yeah, I was like, well, I don't like that. So then obviously I treated it. And I think it was within my sort of first week. So I definitely remember that.
Where were you? What were you doing when it happened?
God, I think it was in the afternoon. I've always been quite sensitive in the afternoon. And I think it was sort of after my lunch. I think it might be when I went back to my placement, because I was only off placement for a week after my diagnosis. I needed that sort of time to think and get used to the condition. And then I sort of went back to placement the next week. And I think it was after I finished the early shift, which finishes about 3 p.m. And I think it was about 4 or 5 that I noticed that I didn't feel good. And it feels like everything's so much more intense, that first hypo I had. And obviously, as years have gone on, my symptoms have slightly changed. I guess they've become a bit more damped down, and I guess you become more used to it. But I think it was work-related, stress-related, because obviously being in a stressful working environment, and then obviously the dose may not have been correct at the time. And I think the hypos, I even noticed them quite bad during the honeymoon period. So I think I had my honeymoon period in the summer. And there was a point where I was like, oh, I don't need insulin anymore. Maybe I'm recovered. But obviously I soon realized that no, you've got to carry on this for life, mate. And that was a very odd situation, because your doses just change all of a sudden. But yeah, I remember that first hypo very vividly as well.
What have been some of the sort of ups and downs that you've had? I assume, have you had any like periods of burnout or things like that, where you just want to, you know, I don't want to deal with being diabetic right now. Any issues there? And if so, how did you address them or deal with them?
Yeah, I did have diabetes burnout, I would say. Actually, it was when I first started with Eden. And I thought I knew about diabetes then, but it was only really when I kind of got involved in diabetes and working full time that I really understood everything
And I still don't, you know, I don't know everything. I just know a lot more than I did. And it was when I started understanding more about the complications that kind of hit me. And I guess it was the change of working environment. And I sort of hit a low, I guess. You know, I was very emotional. I was crying at one point as well. And my work were very, sorry, I've got a sniffly nose. I'm not crying right now. And my work were the most supportive they could have been. And they were, yeah, they were fantastic. And I guess if you're working in a place of healthcare and working in a place of diabetes, then you're in the best place really. But yeah, it lasted sort of a few weeks. And if it wasn't for my family or friends and work, then I guess that would have happened for a lot longer. But it was a time of reflection really. But I guess not since. I guess I have these times of not lows, but sad moments, like, which kind of led me to reignite the need possibly to go on to pump, because there became this, you know, the big push in the pilot of the closed loop systems. And I don't know if anyone else was thinking the same, but, you know, when you hear people starting it, and I was thinking to myself, God, I've been doing this for, it was nearly 10 years at the time, and you know, doing injections every day, you know, I'm restricted by them. And I was thinking, is this it, me for, you know, forever more really, or for a while more? And I sort of hit not a diabetes distress moment, not too much of a low, but I felt slightly burnt out a little bit, demotivated. I'd always inject, be as compliant as I can be, but I sort of hit a point where I was like, is there more to it than what I'm doing at the moment?
Well, it definitely seems to highlight the importance of having a good support system, both medically and emotionally.
Absolutely. I think that one thing, yeah, you definitely need, I think, a good team around you. And I mean, I couldn't be happy with the team that I've got around me clinically, both in education and in my clinical work as well. And my family are really good, actually. I'd say they're not, I don't like to be asked lots of questions, but I like people to ask. But I don't like people to think that they know it if they don't. I like people to be curious, but not presumptuous. So they'll ask questions, but not ask too many, if that makes sense. I think I have the right level of support in both areas, I'd say.
When you first started, were you on actually like syringes and vials, or did you start straight away on pens? And then sort of how has that evolved as you've now gone on to, you've mentioned that you're on now the Libre and the Omnipod Dash.
Yeah, so originally I not syringes or vials. I started on FlexPen of the Levemir and of NovoRapid. I was on tiddly doses as well, tiny doses in comparison to what I need now. And I remember having my insulin start education when I was diagnosed, and then doing the first injection. It was sort of the day after I was diagnosed, and she said, the diabetes nurse said, okay, that's fine. You can get you discharged, and away you go, really. And then I sort of kept plodding along. I had structured education within that first just around 6 months, I'd say, and that was a huge help, especially having a carb calculator as well. That was a huge help, and I managed to get through my degree and go into nursing. And I guess because I moved areas, I felt a bit lost in the system somewhat, because I changed areas a lot. And then it wasn't until I moved to Melton that I changed practice. And that's where it really transformed. I mean, Leicester is just such a good place to be as a patient, from personal experience and also experience of looking after people in and around Leicester. It's such a brilliant place. And me going from where I was to Leicester changed me completely in terms of, you know, I went on to Libre very shortly after. Well, it wasn't very shortly after, it was within a few years, but kind of the referral into everything came quite quick. And it led to me going on to obviously Pump more of recently, but obviously wanting to see the impact that the freestyle had as well. Yeah, so that's a bit about the progress I had.
We covered how things sort of evolved. What are your, having sort of gone through that transition, what are your thoughts on the technology, on the having the flash or the CGM and the pump?
That's a great question. So the flash was definitely a game changer. At least at first, it was very overwhelming, I'd say, because you're seeing so much more data. You know, at first you just see a number from a finger prick, and then you're seeing an arrow, and then you're seeing a graph, and then you're seeing, you know, the change from Libre, the first Libre to Libre 2 was so immense as well. So that was a big changer for me. And then obviously I've had the odd trial just for particularly working in diabetes. I've managed to had the opportunity to try Dexcom, and Dexcom's amazing as well. Just the difference of not having to scan, and I find that there's a lesser sharpness in the trends of the glucose with Dexcom, but the comparisons between the two of the results you get generally I found were similar. I did a thing about it, I think a few weeks ago, of me comparing the two, which, yeah, was very similar, which just shows that they're both really great devices as well. And in trials, they've shown really great evidence, which I'll talk more a bit later. In terms of the pump, which I'm sure I'll talk a little bit with Morgan about, I would say just only a week on it, it's amazing in simple words. It definitely changes your life. It, when people have asked me, like Vicky in the office and a few other people, I've said it's like you're going back to the start again, but you're taking all the knowledge you had with you. So you have your, they work out your total daily dose that you're on the insulin, divide it by at least 20%, and then split that between a basal rate of different sets, and then work out an insulin to carb ratio plus your correction dose of your insulin sensitivity factor. And from there, it's really kind of playing on those ratios and those basal rates. But it's so much more than that as well, you know, with the fact that, you know, I've not got to inject again. I can adjust my basal rates. For example, I adjusted it before I came on this chat an hour before, because when I present or when I do things, I generally get a bit more stress hormones release. So I'll be continue to do that, and I can switch it off when things are finished. And particularly with the Omnipod, what I've loved with this is the fact that it's a patch pump. I'm not going to have any wires around me. It does an automatic priming, and it does an automatic cannula insertion. Obviously the only downside is about the closed loop system, but hopefully that will come one day.
Well, that kind of leads into my next question, which was, what are your hopes for the future as far as diabetes technology? Where do you see things going, or hope they'll get to?
I hope it becomes like an open catalog, kind of in terms of, you know, making sure there's a pathway, which we do have. I think it's giving people the opportunities to progress eventually onto closed loop. But I think part of me, based on the experience that I've had so far, kind of realizes the importance of, you know, doing your carb counting education, going on to pump, learning all about the ratios, basal rates, adjusting those rates, working out how to do things with illness and exercise. And that's what I've been doing during the first year in this first week as well. I was very unwell, and
Yeah, and I went for a run as well, not during the illness, but definitely the access to technology as much as possible for the give, for the right of the person, really.
And then I guess finally, two-part question. If you could send a message to yourself in the past, what would you let your previous self know about diabetes? And then if you could write a letter to yourself in the future, what do you think you would say to future James?
Oh, I love that question. So I guess a thing to myself I would say is, you know, you're doing good, keep going. You've done well so far, and you're doing well now. And that your goal that you wanted to achieve of being a nurse came true, but also your goal of working in diabetes came true, and you've had a kid as well, and you've done that all with diabetes. You ran a few half marathons. So there's really nothing you can do. So, you know, strive for things. In terms of what I would say to myself for the future, I don't know. I guess it would be, that's a really hard one. I don't know. Oh, are you on closed loop? Have you had no complications? I guess it's more a what ifs thing. So like, is my son okay if they not had diabetes? Yeah. Well, are you still in the job you love? Those sort of things, I guess.
Were you the first one in your family with type 1, correct?
Correct. Yeah. There was a mention that my biological uncle had type 2, though my mum was adopted, so she could never be 100% sure, but nothing closely linked, and that's very similar to a lot of people. I think is it 90% of cases with type 1 don't have an immediate family history of the condition. I think
that sounds at least similar to some of the numbers that I've heard. So
yeah.
All right. Well, with that, I think I'll pass things over to Morgan, so you guys can dig in on the Omnipod, and I'm actually going to be listening closely as I will be starting the Dash hopefully very, very soon myself.
Oh, exciting. Exciting.
Hello.
Hi, Morgan.
Hey, I'm loving it so far, but I know we really wanted to all talk about the Omnipod and all of that good stuff. So I think I know a little bit, because like I keep up with, you know, the tweets and all that. But is Omnipod the first pump that you've used, or like where did it all like start? Why, essentially, like why? What benefits did the Omnipod bring for you to pick that one?
Yeah. So this I've been on a pump for now a week. So this is my 8th day, I guess. So very newbie, very, very much a newbie. My I guess everything kind of started back to when I had quite a not severe hypo, but a moderate hypo. It was a few years ago. And I could treat it myself, but I experienced quite moderate symptoms, you know, what we call neuroglycopenic symptoms. And it was a situation where I became quite fearful of hypos, and I didn't want to have them again. Became quite anxious, and I found that as I was trying to bring down my levels and bring down my A1C, I'd noticed that I'd experienced more of the hypos, which made the fear of hypos worse, which then kind of met in the criteria of NICE, particularly in regards to disabling hypoglycemia. So I kind of got referred. At the time, I wasn't using Libre, so the plan was to kind of trial the Libre and then see from there. And like I said, with the closed loop trial that happened, that made me kind of reignite the need or the want to consider pump therapy. And there was the most amazing pump
nurse in my trust who said, I'm going to strongly advocate for you to get on this pump. I'm surprised you're not on one already. You know, I found limitations with being able to do long distance running. So I tend to do sort of, I've done a few half marathons, but after, you know, a good 2 hours of running, I have to consume so many carbs, and it becomes so not only physically draining, but also mentally draining as well. So there was lots of factors that made me think I need to have something to change here. So then I had my first pre-pump clinic appointment, and that was with my new consultant, who's utterly brilliant. And he was very supportive, and he just wanted to understand about me and my diabetes, go back to the start, so we gained a really good understanding. And then we talked about the pros and cons of pumps, and then we talked about the different types of pumps as well. And I guess then I chose the Omnipod for like a different range of reasons. So one, I like the idea of it being a patch pump. So there's, for those who are listening, there's two types of pumps. There's a tethered pump, which is where you have the cannula tubing that you have to prime, and you have the control panel that's attached to the tube, and then you have the cannula that goes in the skin. And then you have the patch pump, such as the Omnipod, which goes directly onto the site itself. So imagine like a bigger version of a CGM, but it's a pump. So that's attached straight onto it. And that sort of triggered to me as a positive. So I didn't have all this stuff around me. So I didn't notice it as much. And then there was mentions of the pod being quite giving good impressions and good experiences from people who did kind of running and exercise. But also another positive in the trust that I work for, I'm not sure if other areas and the trust that I'm a patient for, was that with the pod, the Omnipod, you get a trial period with it. So we get a 3 month trial period to see what it's like. And then if we're not happy, we can switch. But switching with trying with the other ones, so with the tethered pumps, you don't get that trial period. So it's either you go with the tethered and go for the contract, or you go with the pod and you see what it's like and then kind of go from there, really. So yeah, that's the start.
That's like a huge difference, because over here you don't get a trial period. I didn't get a trial period with my Omnipod.
Yeah, I think it's a shame that's not kind of everywhere. I don't know if it's like that in other parts of the country here in the UK, but that was kind of like one big one. I thought, well, if I'm going to choose something, I'd rather test drive it to see what it's like rather than commit straight away. And it's ticking a lot more boxes. The only limitations, I guess, with the pod is the amount of insulin that's stored. So it only allows up to 200 units and a minimum of 85 that you have to put in. And it lasts up to 8 days. So I think storage is higher in different insulin pumps. And I had generally needed quite bigger, large total daily doses. So at first, it's kind of, when I was unwell, it definitely lasted less than 2 days. But as I've kind of progressed through the week, my basal has come down. Well, it's come down more, just around 50% from what it was when I was on pens. So my need to change it as often is obviously stretched out longer. But yeah, just the whole positives of the pod kind of made me think that's the one. I guess the big thing was the closed loop ability in the other ones, like the Tandem, for example. But I was more thinking around, what do I want to use functionally that's going to work for me? What do I want to go from the basic perspective? And that's why I chose the pod.
Yeah, well, when I was on the Omnipod, there you can still like do like a closed loop DIY thing. There's options out there to get that closed loop.
I've heard. Yeah. I might have to speak to one or two patients about their experiences doing that. I mean, I know that there's obviously there's been whispers or you know, some form of suggestions of Insulet having discussions with Dexcom, but there was mentions of that actually not occurring. But there is hope of the Omnipod 5 then, you know, potentially going out to be in closed loop.
Yeah, that was a big thing for me too. I wish I knew more about it before I picked the Omnipod, but I was able to do that, like the Riley Link DIY system.
I mean, I'm just a baby. What, I don't know anything about the closed loops as well. I know, I understand the, you know, what it does, but the systems themselves, I'm not so sure about. I guess I'm sort of just taking it a step at a time at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, getting a pump for like the first time is already a huge step. You know, like you can think about the rest of that kind of stuff later. So got that. Sorry, I lost my place in my little questions. So in order to like, what was like the process like in getting one? I think you talked a little bit about like talking to your healthcare provider and like the options and whatnot, but like whenever, how long was the process?
So after I sort of reignited that discussion with my now pump nurse, who's the pump lead specialist, she was very quick to speak to my now consultant. And I must have got an appointment within just a few weeks. No, actually, it was the next week. There was space in his slot and he could provide that slot for me. So I was very... I was really impressed with that. And I think that's because just of how long I was, the discussions initially started. And then once it was the decision to go with the pod during that pre-pump clinic, then I think it was around 10 weeks to get last week's first appointment, which was the pump start clinic itself. And prior to that, they obviously, you'd have to write down a week's worth of your doses, of your basal that you gave, of your carbs, etc. So then they could work out your total daily dose and then work out your initial rates, just as a starting point. And then I did a lot of tweaks last week. You might have seen it. So if you haven't, they'll give you a nice weekly kind of idea of what it was like. You know, first you put the prescription of the ratios and the basal rates that you have. So the basal rate, it's basically a rate of amount of the insulin that goes in per hour, just slowly drips through. And obviously we know it's one type of insulin, which is a rapid insulin. So mine's Fiasp that I use, but I'm hoping to soon, I think the plan is to change me over to Lumjev. There's a lot of, particularly in the trust I'm working for, there's a lot of positive things in terms of Lumjev, the use of Lumjev in pumps, quicker in and out response. So potential to change over to that. So once the basal rates were set, obviously then it's working out your insulin to carb ratio, but prior to the pump day itself, you have to prep your body for it. So because I was on a twice daily basal, then the plan was to do my normal, everything normal for the previous day. And then on the day, do not give my basal insulin. And I remember the night before I was changing onto the pump, I just sat there for a few minutes staring at my long acting insulin thinking, this could be the last time I give an injection. And wow. I literally stared there for like the pen for a little bit, because I calculated it was like, I don't know, 15,000 injections. And it was an amazing, it was a very weird experience. But
and I've tweeted you, haven't I, James? Because you, like you said, you were diagnosed Sunday the 12th of February 2012. So like 10 years on, you're pretty much starting your next chapter, isn't it? So I can imagine that. That was a special moment, wasn't it? Like, you can't put a price on that moment of 10 years of living diabetes and injecting yourself and that statistic. And then now, yeah, you're in your new chapter. Exciting.
Yeah, so you'll see on my cover, my profile cover, I've got my date of diagnosis, and I've been thinking of adding a new date now of my, I call diagnosis D, my diagnosis date D-Day or something. So I think I want to call my pump day P-Day or something like that, and have that underneath, because it is such a, it's a massive change. And for anyone out there who's not on pump, and you know, you're at a time where you're thinking, I'd like to try one, or I feel like, you know, it would suit my life. You definitely have those discussions with your diabetes team. And really kind of talk to them about how things impact your life with diabetes. Because you really never know what could happen in the future as well.
So you've had it for a week now, right? Or a little over a week?
Yeah, so it's day 8 today. So I had my second pump start clinic today, which was really good, actually. And it was so good to... so the pump start clinic, so the one we had last week, there was 4 of us, and we had the same people in it this week as well. So it was really good to see their experiences. And in that week, I guess I had a really not the best start, not what I wanted. So I became unwell on the Tuesday, and I had to do sick day rules. And my dosage became a lot more. My requirement for insulin became a lot more. And what I found interesting with the sick day rules is regarding the ketones. So as soon as they go above 0.6, you then switch from a correction dose of your pen, your pump, to your pen. And that's because obviously the pump gives a small increment of doses, a bit slower, whereas with the pen, you get it obviously a quicker go all at once. And that's where I found being on the pump a lot more confidence in, particularly around hypos, because the response to the treatment is much quicker than with a pen device. And that's because you've just got all this surge of insulin at once with the pens, whereas much slower with the pump as well. And then once I recovered, I had to then reduce down my basal rates. And then I went out for a run. I didn't think I'd go for as long as I did, but I did a sort of a 9-mile run, and it was so good to, I mean, that some people might go 9 miles, that's just crazy, but for me, no, and I've ran for many years, so it's not so much for me, but it was so good to reduce down those rate, the basal rates, and not take carbs, and that was a big perk for me. And I spoke to Dana, can't remember her surname, but she was on the chat, and I asked her for her experience and her advice, and her way of saying it was, it's basically like DIY. You've got to do it yourself. What I do is going to be a different need for a different person. So just go out there and, you know, do those things you've been told, but then learn from them and then go from there, basically.
So do you think this is something that you'll be staying on? Because I know 10 years of injections versus 8 days of a pump, I mean, like, it's a lot. But do you find that it has made, like, things easier, like less hypos, all that?
Too early to say with the hypos, definitely. So one thing that the clinic they had was I'm too tightly controlled on the rates I was. So they had to reduce things down quite a bit. I'm doing it sort of myself, which they were really happy with, obviously with my experience, not being on pump, but in general as a DSN. But they wanted to bring things down even more, which, yeah, hopefully that will definitely obviously help in terms of the hypos. In terms of long-term, absolutely, I hope to stay on this. In terms of if I'll stay on the pod, I guess it's an early stage yet, you know, particularly if closed loops, etc. Because I work with there's a doctor within the diabetes center who's just
along from the Eden office called Thomas Griffin, and he's amazing. And he's kind of given us some insight around the closed loop trials and saying that the best outcomes are those that do less. So if you work more harder using the closed loop system, you'll get worse outcomes. Whereas all they want you to do is accurately do your carb counting, and then that's it. It'll work out for you, unless the technology goes wrong. He says it's when you try to fight the machine or think smarter, that's when it will go wrong. So for me, the future is dependent on what happens with closed loops and systems. But yeah, I think the future's bright. The future's pumping.
Awesome, mate. Honestly, thank you so much for everything this evening. It's been an absolute pleasure.
You're very well welcome. I hope that, all the information's been really useful. And I thought best to try and get it through, so because you've got so many amazing future speakers coming through. And it's been enjoyable. And thank you for having me.
Legend, mate. Really, really awesome. We'll keep in touch for sure.
Anytime, mate. Anytime. And thank you all. And sleep well, everyone.
You too, buddy.
You too. See you later.
Bye.